Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit and creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today we have a very special guest. His name is Faust Ruggiero, and he is the author of the Fix Yourself Empowerment series. And he's been a therapist for 40 years. So this is going to be very exciting. So welcome, Faust.
Hillary, thanks for inviting me. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Yes, I'm very excited about this conversation because, first of all, I read his book, The Fix Yourself Handbook, which was, you know, I have to say my first reaction was, I don't want to fix myself. I don't need to be fixed. I don't want to read that self-help crap, right? But then I started reading it because, of course, I had to do my preparation for the interview. And I was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. I was taking notes. I could have highlighted the entire book. So then I have one more book just to show you, which I started reading, the Fix Your Anger Handbook. And oh my God, that one, I can't wait to keep reading that one. So anyway, you know, I don't know where you want to start, but I can't wait to ask you some questions. But anyway, let's go back to your background. I know you had said when you were young, I think you were nine. He wasn't nine, and he had had a stroke, a debilitating stroke. You were the oldest, right?
Yeah, my dad had a stroke when I was 9 years old, and a pretty bad one. So, you know, his working career ended at that point, and four kids, and here we go, you know. So.
And what did you do at nine? You know, you're the big man.
You think you're doing well, but you're surviving. You know, I always say I was learning how to be nine, and all of a sudden I turned 29. You know, it's just the way it was. I don't think much about it. Those are the things I look at and say, that's what happened. And as an adult, I have control over my life. I can, and a lot of times we'll reference ourselves back to places in our early lives that say, well, that had such an effect on me and I can't move past it. But you can. You really can.
Okay. So obviously you survived and you, did your mom go back to work? Did your mom have
to
go to work?
Yeah, she was back in the early days, a secretary. She actually worked at the Pentagon for, I think, 3 years, came back, married dad. And then, so then she went back to work after he got sick. She was home raising four kids. But of course, when that happened, she went back and, worked during the day. And then, you know, we took care of things at home, you know, best we could. And then she came home and fixed what we were trying to take care of.
And was your dad like in a wheelchair? Was he there?
No, he was up and about. In fact, we had a relative that owned some businesses, so he went and did some things with him. You know, he could get around and do some things. So he did work a bit, but nothing like he did before. He was a civil engineer that worked for the Department of Highways in Pennsylvania. So he was really, really had a good job until that happened.
Mm, okay. All right. So you know, obviously you went to college and did you decide to be a therapist? Like, when did you decide?
I knew what I wanted to do. I knew I was pre-college days when I knew high school. I knew pretty much that psychology would be what I studied. I wasn't sure what I would do with it once I got there. But once I got there and started doing the clinical work and did some internships and said, okay, fine, this is me. And, graduated way back in 1979, you know, before most of your listeners will have been born. worked in clinics and in a prison and hospitals, things like that. And then finally went to private practice.
And what
when you say you knew it was for you, do you mind? I'm just curious for myself, like what, because I went, you know, thinking psychology, you know, and then we had the monkey class or the, you know, the class about the animals. And it was like, everyone quit then. Like, what made you continue with it?
I found every aspect of it fascinating. I've always found people fascinating. You know, you get to know a person, and then as you do, a layer comes off, and then another one, and then you realize this thing, this person can go deeper and deeper, and if you're willing to, you can go with them. So that it was very natural progression with that type of an interest and those kinds of skills. I mean, you're born with some skills, I think, and you know, the way my brain works is to attach to someone else's, you know, and just keep going deeper. So, you know, I went out and got the training, did all the things that you do that you do it right. I mean, if you're going to counsel people, you're talking about a lot of years of training to do it properly. There's a lot of people out there that think they can take a class and get a certificate and go online and save the world. That's not going to happen. You know, those of us that know better, we know we took the time. We took the internships and the clinical direction that we needed. And so we did all that and said, okay. And you know that as you do that, the more you do, the more you're interested you become, the deeper it goes. So you know you're on the right track. So I knew all that. That's exactly where I was going to go.
And where do you think, I mean, it might not be a good question, but where do you think you got, I mean, how were the prisons in terms of your learning? Do you think you got a bunch more there that you might not have gotten out in terms of people?
Any venue has its lessons to teach. And the prison had its, you know, there was, I probably learned a whole lot about addiction and about people empowering themselves in situations that were where they're stripped of power, where they had to go deep and find themselves. So, you know, it was a very, very a good thing for me just to be able to say, well, I'm going to be a piece of that with you. You know, you're going to hopefully move past some of the things that have happened in your life and straighten some things out. And then you also find that, you know, contrary to popular belief, people in prison are not all bad people up there. You know, there are some people that just are evil there. But you get a lot of people that just made some life mistakes and they're there and they're good people. And you treat them that way. You treat them as good people who made a mistake, and let's see if we can't help you get things back on track.
And did you find that most of them listened? I mean, not them, but anybody, like that people do. I mean, I guess they're there because they want help. They wouldn't have come if they didn't. Yeah. But do you find that most of them are willing to listen and make changes?
People are. If you know, the first thing you do, if you're a therapist, you want to create that rapport that's so important. You want them to trust you, to know that you can connect, to know that you can, you're understanding what they're saying, and you can help them put together a plan to move forward. You know, you want that to be actionable. They want to leave your office and say, okay, he gets me. He understands what I'm going through. Plus, he has a plan, and he's going to teach me the steps that I need to take. You know, every time I go in, we're going to talk about something else and something we can do. And so it's not just me going and getting information and venting. I'm also leaving there with some things I can do to straighten my life out or make some changes.
And were you always with the steps? I mean, I know in the book there's steps in every chapter, but did you always have that when you started out?
Yeah, yes. My opinion, you know, Hillary, my opinion is you can throw all the information at a person you want to, but if you don't give them action steps, things they can do with that, they get stuck. My biggest gripe about self-help and all the people that are doing interviews and podcasts is that they're giving people tons and tons of information and then nothing to do with it. Okay, here's all the information. And they'll say, okay, great. I have all this stuff. I have no idea what to do with it, where to start, how to organize it, how to follow through on the plan, what happens when I fall back a little bit. So, you know, my writings are, and my teachings, my counseling is always about, let's provide the information so you understand it, and then let's give you the things you need to do so you learn how to turn that information into action.
Hmm. That's good. I mean, you're right. When I hear a lot of information, I'm just like, all right, that's too much. And I leave overwhelmed or at best confused. So this, you know,
you and I were talking earlier in the week, and you said, you know, it's a lot of times people will, as they get towards the end of the interview, a lot of people say, well, you know, they're after 30 minutes, they start to ease off, people will check out. And I said, the analysis I get from people I interview with say that doesn't happen on my interviews. And I think the reason for that is they're waiting for more action steps. I say, okay, fine. We're getting all this information. Now he's saying, do this. What's he going to say about this? How can I do this? So they're holding on, because people will do that if they think there's something they can walk away with that they can use. When it comes to this type of, you know, counseling and all that information that we're giving people, if you can use it, people will listen. They'll listen as long as you want to talk, as long as they're getting something they can use.
Mm. Okay. Good to know. I'm writing that down. So, all right. Well, where do you want to start? Maybe we should start giving them action steps. I mean, you know, I can pick out the things. Well, I just have to ask. This book is so, I mean, it's sequential. It makes sense. You know, it's like full. It's like perfect. You know what I mean? Like, how did you just write it? Like, boom, it came out? Or did this take a lot of work of rewriting and stuff?
The first one was Yeah, the first was a lot of work and a lot of research to do it. I wanted to first come up with a design that people could use and make sense with. And so the first thing you do is you go and you do the literature review. What's everybody writing? And I looked and I said, okay, a lot of it's good stuff. But every time I walked away from these books, I said, they're not telling them how to do it. They're giving them lots of information. So the first thing I wanted to do was make sure I told people how to do things. The second thing I wanted to do was to keep the chapter short. You know, again, self-help books, they ramble and they go back and over the same thing three or four times. And so I wanted the chapters to, you know, kind of stay around 6 to 8 pages, give people all the information they needed there, provide examples if necessary, and then hit those action steps. Okay, you know, you and I were talking yesterday about people pleasing. Okay, let's talk about what goes into all of that. Now, here are the things you can do to avoid that. That makes some changes in your life, not find yourself subjected to all the ridicule that goes along with that, all those kinds of things. You're not in a subordinate position anymore. How do you do those things? And then we provide the steps for people. And they say, okay, now I understand where the people-pleasing came from and what I was doing and why I was doing it. And then most books stop right there. I wanted to take it to the next step. Let's do these things. I'm not saying they're all going to be comfortable, but if you do these things, it begins to stop.
I'm going to that chapter here because I am a people please. Oh, I was. And that's why I started getting real with Hillary, because I wanted to keep everyone happy. I didn't want anyone to get upset. And it was very limiting. You know, it was very limiting. And I mean, can we just talk about that? Like, I don't know how people become that. I guess it's something we learn as a child. It's like a strategy, right? Obviously, it doesn't work. I mean, there was someone at work I would listen to for hours trying to keep her happy. She wasn't, you know what I mean? She would get mad anyway and manipulate me into control. Right. And right. It wasn't a good strategy. And only when she left my area and I wasn't working with her anymore did I realize how toxic it was, how exhausting it was. You know, my kids were looking at me like, why, mom, why are you doing that? And I was like, it's my job. And I really thought it was my job to keep her happy. Well, I realized I couldn't. But, you know, I'm sure I'm not the only one. How, you know, how does this, I don't know if it matters how it happens, but can you just say, you know, I can read from the book, but like, just if there's a people pleaser listening, what they could do about it. Would you be willing to do that?
Sure. You look at where it comes from a variety. Usually three or four different places it can come from. What is insecurity about oneself, wanting to be liked? Some people cannot deal with a situation that is tense. If people are unhappy, they're, you know, they want to kind of, you know, right the ship, so to speak. So they're constantly doing that. Other people are afraid of confrontations. So I don't want that person to get mad, so I'll do these things. And then other people are the fixers. You know, I'm going to fix everything. And I want you to feel good, but I want to feel good about myself because, yeah, I fixed the situation. I can look at myself that way. There are all these things that we do, you know, and where do they come from? It's insecurity in ourselves. You can go back. Sometimes there's a traumatic situation, but most of the time with people pleasing, it's a slow and a gradual progression. You know, we start doing that when we're young. We can see people pleasing, you know, in kids when they're 4 and 5 years old, as they're instead of asserting themselves, they're acquiescing. They're going back and they're making sure, you know, things are okay. Sometimes the people will come out of home situations that are, you know, difficult. And as kids, maybe mom and dad fight a lot and they decide they're going to play the role of fixing that. Or a divorce is happening and they're going to fix those things. Illness happens. I'll fix that. You know, the problem is.
So,
go ahead.
Yeah. Can I? So for me, you know, if I look, my dad had a temper. I mean, he was a gentleman. He was a dentist, you know, not like a physical guy. But when he got really, really mad, he was mean or he, you know, could. You know, there was a couple of times when, you know, he was felt like he was out of control. So I learned to be careful. You know, now I know that was a long time ago. It's not happening now, but I'm sure there's other people who've had angry parents or something happening to them. And that was the strategy that made them feel safe, right? Like that, I was like, I learned you don't get dad mad. So you know, I wasn't going to speak up. I wasn't going to say anything. I was going to try to, you know, stay under the radar and do whatever I could to not get, like, you know, verbally abused or whatever. So that, you know, I guess it's only, I know I'm talking it through, but it's only after awareness that I could do something about it. Before that, it's just the way it is. You know, I'm still like this, even though I'm not 5 anymore, right? So what would you recommend for people? I know, read the book and there's a lot of stuff there, but just, you know, it's kind of ingrained. It's like physical almost. Like, what do you recommend for that? I'll be quiet.
The first thing you want to look at is your ability to communicate and face situations that demand some confrontation. Confrontation does not mean you have to get in someone's face. It just means that you state your opinion. I always talk about boundaries and setting those boundaries before you arrive in one of those situations. You know, you have the spouse who or even the dad who does that. You know, well, I'm going to set my boundaries. The boundary doesn't have to mean I'm going to get in dad's face or I'm going to yell back at dad or tell him he's wrong. It might mean, you know what, I'm not going to get involved in this. I'm removing myself from this. He's not going to, you know, force me to do anything. You know, he's dad. He might say, all right, clean your room, that type of thing. But unless there's abuse in the picture and you're, you know, as long as you're safe, you set boundaries and you do that with people who and you know that you're trying to please someone because your body tenses. You can feel that every time you're, you know, and your mind knows I'm doing something that I don't want to do. I should have spoke up. That's one of the things that really comes out. I should say something. Or after it's over, I said yes when I should have said no. That's a big one for people pleasing. If you're getting those types of signals, then your boundaries aren't where they need to be, and you're probably afraid that if you say no, they scream and yell. They're mad at you. They turn the place upside down. And you know what? I always tell people, reference it like this. You have a 5-year-old. You go into the store. That child wants candy or a toy. You say no. They throw themselves on the floor and kick their feet. And you're going to give them the candy so they don't do that? You're training a 5-year-old to be that way. Mm-hmm. It's the same thing with an adult. What are they going to do? If they're not going to hurt you, then let them be mad. They're going to get over it. They need you. You've been people pleasing them. You've been serving their needs. at this point, I say, let them get mad. Do you mind if I use that thing? I want to use your computer. Oh, no, I'm in the middle of something. I'm writing a report. I'm doing a project. No, not now. No, it's going to be 10 minutes. No, I said no. And then they're going to get mad and scream and yell because that's what they do. And then you're going to say, what's the worst that happens? They're not talking to me today. What people pleasers do is they get so nervous when the person's not talking to them. And I say, and I help them work through it. I say, okay, they're not talking to you now. They're mad. How long are they going to do that? For the night, the next day? And then they're going to come back because they'll need something else. What are you worried about? Are they going to hit you? Are they going to throw you out of the house? What are they going to do? They'll be mad. And I just hate when things are so uncomfortable. I said, well, they're going to be uncomfortable either, regardless. You're going to give them their way and you're going to be uncomfortable for being stepped on again, or you're not going to give them their way and they're going to get mad at you. Personally, I'd rather them be mad at me than be under their shoe. That's my way of looking at it. And it's training your brain to understand that they're going to get mad. That's okay if they get mad. What you're doing is what's right. You're doing a project on that computer. You don't want anyone to do anything because if they lose the information, you have a problem. So, and the other part is simply, it's your computer. You control the computer, not them. They may ask you and you may say no. Maybe an hour from now, tomorrow, yeah, but right now I can't. And they should be able to respect that. And if they can't, it's their problem. They'll either have to go get themselves a computer, find another one, or wait till you're done. They have no options. Are they going to throw you out of the way and sit in your chair and say, too bad I got it? That may not be a safe situation. Okay, then you may have to think that through and if that's the case, quite frankly, if they're like that, get out of there. I mean, I'd get out of that relationship if that's what you're dealing with. But again, what are they going to do? They're going to get mad. It's okay. Let them get mad.
So my fear, and I know it's dumb and it's probably fits into all the categories in the book, but like my fear is, oh my God, they're going to leave.
Like, because you didn't let them do something?
Yeah, that's like, like there's this fear, well, and I know it's irrational or whatever, but that's like, what is that? I don't know what that is, except,
well, here's my take on that is if you are so afraid that they're going to leave, and if that is in fact realistic, why are you with them? Because you have to now, you really must perform all the time or be alone. I would just say, get the darn thing over with,
And
you're going to survive.
There was a person in my life who it was like, had to be very careful, obviously not a healthy relationship, but I was caught in it. So I was always, and then finally I got mad and I said something and that was it. It was over. And I always thought that I had done something wrong until somebody said, no, you did the right thing so that he would leave, that was the right, but in my mind, I had done it wrong. And I know it may sound crazy, but I'm sure I'm not the only one who's put up with bad behavior as a people pleaser. And I always wondered, why do we do it? It makes no sense. Or I could look at someone else and say, that makes no sense what she's doing. But then here I am doing it too, or they stick with someone because they think they can't get better or whatever, put up with stuff. So is that, I guess that's all part of it, right? Is not having the boundaries and not.
People pleasing, is one of those situations where I always advise people when I'm doing these kinds of interviews, get some help for that. Go talk to a counselor because there are so many things that play into it. And we want to make sure you're safe. A lot of people say, well, just say no and get out. But if it's not a safe place, you have some issues. Some people are not people pleasing. It looks like that, but what they're doing is surviving. I better say this. I better do this because if I don't, I'm not sure what's flying against the wall and it might be me. So I always tell people if that's the case and you can't stop people pleasing, get some help because you're not helping you and you're not helping the other person. because while you're fixing everything in their world, they're not acquiring the skills to do so. And why should they? Because you're their slave. So, you know, you want to go back and just talk that over. It's not something that's going to have you in counseling forever, but that's the kind of thing where you can really just uncover all the everything that's specific to you and your situation, and then get advice about that. Again, that works just for you, so you don't, you know, no one misguides you without having all the pieces.
Yeah. And for someone who, no, this is not me, but if somebody was in an abusive situation, why do you think they stay? Same sort of reasons?
It's a little more complicated. For some people, it's all they know. You mentioned before, I can't get anyone better, or I have nothing. If I leave here, I don't know where I'm going to go. Those are all real. And for some, the other part of this is, particularly in cases of abuse, believe it or not, the brain actually adjusts. The brain is a learning device that also, it builds neurological structures, if you will, while we're learning. So they learn to accept that kind of behavior. When they don't have it, they actually go into withdrawal from it. They'll leave the person, and they will oftentimes go back to them. And we're saying, are you crazy? You left there. Now you're going back, because the brain actually goes into a withdrawal kind of a state, and they're very uncomfortable when they're not in that environment. It may be abusive, but they know how to live in it. They know just what to do in it. It has all the boundaries and limitations in all the structure, actually, that their minds adapt to, and they stay there. So when I work with women, particularly who have been abused, and we want them to stay away, you know, then we're training them to actually have their brains relearn some things and go through that withdrawal period. And the abusers are all very adept at bringing them back, because they know what buttons to press and get that little addiction started all over again. Again, if you're doing that, get some help. Talk to someone, preferably someone, you know, that has training in that particular problem.
And what would you say, I don't know if you could put a percentage on the number of people who are in that situation who can actually retrain their brain and get out?
Most people can, but it takes time, and you have to be willing to make the change. You know, it's unfortunate, but, you know, I always tell people I have job security because you people don't listen. And I say, when I say, try this, do it and understand, and you'll see it in any introduction of the books I write. These are programs for life. If you think, you know, welcome to the Fix Yourself in 10 Steps Club, that's not here. You know, these are programs for life, and you got to keep on doing them. And if you decide to slip back, then you know, it's low lying fruit at that point. It's never good. So, you know, you want to be able to understand this as a lifelong endeavor, and be able to work on yourself and with yourself every day.
So let's say let's say they're reading the anger book, and the anger is their thing. And, you know, I guess I've heard, and I don't know if this is what you're saying, that we can become addicted to certain emotions, and that's what our body craves because it knows it. So let's say they're working through the book and they get good, they follow the steps and they're clear, or they're aware. Are you saying that, I mean, I guess, you know, what I've heard is, like, addicts or whatever, they can be doing really great and they'll hit some stress and they revert back. Even though they might have had 15 years or 20 years, the stress kicks in the old, I don't know, I wouldn't say it's a comfort zone, but the old pattern. I mean, is it ever a time when someone can have their good habits take over?
Sure. We see that with addicts all the time. You know, they may have been involved in alcohol or another drug or any other type of addiction. I mean, it's not just those. Can you change that? Yeah, you're going to pull away. You're going to have a program that you work with every day to retrain the way your brain works. And you're going to follow through on that. When it comes to addictive kind of things, and anger is one of those, anger can become very addictive. because it raises all the hormone levels in the body. So the brain is flushed with all those things and it's used to it. And there are times what we see in later stages of addiction where people are actually getting angry in order to feel the way that the chemicals stimulate the brain. So they'll create angry situations. So again, those are all the things we have to get in there and tear apart and diagnose properly so that we understand how we're going to treat this. And with anger, there are so many kinds of anger. I think people just think anger is an in-your-face explosion. You know, there are angers like righteous anger, which doesn't do that. It thinks it's, you know, anger for the right reasons. It's, you know, you have a anger that gets back at people, passive-aggressive anger. You have, and then you have your rapid anger. There are at least 12 kinds of different anger. So we look at which anger a person has and how we're going to treat that. But all of them, anything we do in our life trains our brain. Doesn't matter whether it's positive or negative. The brain is a learning instrument and becomes trained. And learning is nothing more than, you know, than repetition over time. So the more we do something, the brain gets used to it and it gets into its comfort zone. It likes that and we don't want to change that. So, but that very statement should tell you that if you did things for a long time the wrong way and trained your brain that way, if you reverse the process and train your brain with the right information and taking the right action steps, your brain will also learn that, but it will take some time. That's the key. And if you're willing to put that time in, it will happen. You'll get better.
Yeah. So nobody is stuck with anything.
No.
So however you think your life is, it could be as different as you want, right?
Yeah, the key is not to make a decision about where you think you're stuck at and how you're going to remain there the rest of your life. And that's what we do. You know, we decide, you know, and this is just normally. I mean, I have friends that are now in their 60s and they're getting heavy and they're on medicines. And I said, well, I'm in my 60s. That's what happens now. And I said, how did you even get there? Why would you think such thoughts? If you eat all the right things, exercise, do all the things you're supposed to do, and they look at me and say, really? You want me to exercise? And I they're eating all the sugars and the starches and the chemical foods, and this goes in the microwave. I said, well, then you're going to reap those benefits. That's what you're putting into your body. So you're making decisions ahead of time. You should be saying, you know what? The sky's the limit, and I can do anything that I want to do. I have to put my mind to it, commit to the program, and not stop. It works. It has to work.
But someone like that who says that, I mean, are they just lazy? Like if they say, well, I don't want to exercise. I mean, I guess they're just choosing the other effect, right?
The brain is a comfort organ. It is designed to make us feel good. Now, how it does that is our choice. You know, I'm a person that, you know, I'm in my late 60s and I am in the gym. I have a training center in my basement, but I'm there every day for at least an hour. I've been doing this all my life. And my brain loves that. You know, I mean, I look forward to it. It's not addictive. If I can't do it for a week, I can't do it. But if I can get down there and do that, that's a comfort zone. That's a way to feel good. When I'm done doing that, I say, man, that just feels so much better. My mind is clear. My body feels good.
We're going to be right back after our commercial break. It's like, I don't want to stop. You're right. You're right. That's what he said. You're not going to want to stop. So, all right. I'll we'll be right going. Back. Yeah. All right. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Has social-emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. K-I-K-O-R-I.
Do you ever feel like you can't say what you really want to say? Or that you're stuck or in a holding pattern in your relationships, career, personal life, or finances? Are there things you want in life that you've given up on? Are you resigned that this is as good as it's going to get? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Hillary Burns, host of the Getting Real with Hillary Show, has the solution you need. Hillary is a published author of 3 books and has a program called the Getting Real Process. This process frees you from what is holding you back, allowing you to create a life you love. Don't believe it? It is hard to believe that it could work, isn't it? The proof is that hundreds of Hillary's clients have used the Getting Real Process and are now free to create whatever they want in relationships, career, finances, enjoying life, or just loving themselves more. So go to realtalkwithhillary.com and order Hillary's book, Real Talk, and set up a conversation.
Thank you, as always, to KokoriApp.com. If you'd like to bring experiential social-emotional learning to your schools, teams, businesses, go to KokoriApp.com and schedule a time to talk to them. It is really a wonderful process. We're talking about processes that get people connected, get your kids socialized, and have them just, you know, feeling like a part of the community again. And also, I have my 3 books here. This one was when I really didn't speak up. The second piece of French toast. If marriage was my dream, why was I numbing myself? So if you've ever numbed yourself, this is a really good book to see how to maybe break that habit as we're talking about. This one was tools and techniques for getting back to what I call the right side of life, which is the happy, fun side, instead of the one where, again, we were talking about being stuck. I felt I was stuck on the other side. These techniques get me back on the fun side. And then this one, especially for people pleasers, you know, how do you speak up? Well, it took me a while, but you can do it. And with this, you go to realtalkwithhillary.com, check it out, schedule time, and we will get you talking in a way that works. And now we're bringing back Faust Ruggiero to a fascinating conversation. And wow. So basically, I work out every day too. And I always thought, you know, well, maybe I'm obsessive or something, but it's actually a good habit. That's a good thing. But, you know, there was one at the very beginning of the book, you were talking about destination versus journey. And I think, you know, anything can become, you know, I got to do it. You know, I can't not do it. Like that kind of thing becomes another issue, right? I don't know if that's that section, but I certainly related to that where, you know, I was trying to develop a second income for retirement and I didn't, and I haven't yet, but that I felt like, you know, I had failed and I wasn't enjoying the journey anymore because that's just the way it was, you know, again, until I became aware of what was going on. But I think there's a lot of people who want to get to the next thing at all costs. What would you say to them?
Well, it's that day-to-day plan. When you talk about a journey and destination, we all have that in our heads. I like to get to that point, and when I get there, I'm going to feel good. But we're back to what's your plan. Those are those action steps I talk about. If you're going to, you have a dream, you have a desire, something you really want to do, you've got to have a plan that day by day gets you there. And that's that day by day living, whether you're fixing yourself, whether you're addressing issues in your life like people pleasing, whether you are trying to become a strong and more empowered person. What's your plan for getting there? Get there to get there. You do it every day, and then you will realize that goal. But in the meantime, it's just a day-to-day journey you're on and you have to work it every day. If you don't, then, you know, it's the amount of work you put into it that's going to get you there. If you decide to take time off, then you either slow down your journey or bring it to a halt. Those people that are committed, they get there.
But what about the ones who, you know, it's like when I get there, then I'll be happy, as opposed to enjoying the journey.
I always discourage that. The reason for that is, you know, you're here now. Maybe get there could be a few years down the road. That is going to look very different when you get there. We have an idea in our head. Well, when I get there, I'm going to have this and be this and experience this. That's down the road. So many things can happen. Life's dynamic. It changes all the time. The possibility of you getting there and it's exactly what you thought it was, not good. Again, you have to create it. You're not. And again, even when they say, well, when I get there, and I still ask the same question, well, how are you getting there? Tell me that. When they say, when I get there, I'm going to feel much better. I say, I'm glad. That's great. How are you going to get there? Well, I thought I'd do this and this. I said, okay, a couple things you told me there, but you know, those are big things. Are you going to start them today, tomorrow? What's your plan to start them? And they look at that. By that point, after I've gone two or three questions deep, they're done. Those people typically are not going to do it. The people that say, when I get there, I'm going to be happy. You know, you should be happy every day of your life. You should be happy on the journey with everything you're doing to get there, not only when you're there. And the other point I like to make with them is that if you're saying, when I get there, I'm going to be happy, that means every day between now and then you're not. These are days of your life going by. So, you know, I say you program happiness and you make the journey, the things you're doing to get to where you want to go, you make that something that feels good. When I have people coming into my office, and you probably can see the way I am as I speak, I will joke, I'll have a good time with them. We'll get down to business. They'll laugh, they'll cry, whatever it may be. But we are going to put the journey in place and we're going to make that happen. And my advice to them is always learn how to enjoy the work. Then it's not work anymore. I get that myself. They say, my God, you counsel people. It might be 10 hours a day. Doesn't it exhaust you? And I say, no, I love every minute of it. And if I didn't, I probably shouldn't be in the profession. So I love doing it. And you should love every minute of your life or at least have that in your mind to work toward. And you're going to get challenged. We all are. I make that my statement, but I don't know. An hour from now, I might get horrible news. I don't know what's going to happen. But I will tell you this, until it does, I'm not going to sabotage myself and make it more difficult on myself. That doesn't make any sense.
Right. Okay. Thank you. And all right, here's a big one. Well, there's a bunch. There's so much I could ask you about. But this one, when you had the story about the two people on the date. And the girl, you know, has gone through the process. She's secure in herself. You know, it doesn't matter whether she likes him or not. She's just there to have a good time. But the boy, I forget his name, was all nervous. Does she like me and all that kind of stuff? And I related to that because, it was all about that. So, but I could see the way you were talking about it, and I don't remember the chapter. But when you're secure in yourself, you don't need them to like you. When you're not, it's like you need it. You need it to be okay. I think I spent a lot of my years that way. What would you like to tell us about that?
Now, you know, we're really talking about empowerment.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of, especially women, when they go out on dates, they're really, I'm not going to say desperate, but like that relationship is going to save their life. That's what they're looking for. That, you know what I'm saying? And I think it's not healthy and it doesn't work. So, okay.
No, it doesn't. You should be comfortable with yourself before you go into a relationship with someone else. The chapter talks about being balanced, being able to physically, emotionally, intellectually, even spiritually have a balance that, you know, where you feel good about yourself, where your emotions aren't overriding the way you should think, where your brain has clarity of thought, where physically you're not excited and agitated or anxious. Where, you know, spiritually, if you can connect with what's inside, you know, more of the essence, your soul, whatever you want to call it, those things work for you. My goal is to get people to the point that they feel as though they are complete. I don't need you to complete me. I want to appreciate my time with you. I want to say I thoroughly enjoyed being with that person. Maybe I can't even wait to be with them again. It's so much fun. But if it's not there, I'm going to move on with my life and I'm going to be okay. And if it's the first date and it works out, we want to go to a second date, that's great. And if we don't, that's okay too. I don't mind. I'm going to be just as happy. And that's the way you should be going into situations, not only dating, but anything in your life. If your life so depends, I see this with social media, with cell phones. Oh my God, my whole life is on there. Seriously? Your whole life is in your brain. It's the way you think and the way your emotions work and your soul. That's you. That's the person, not that mechanical device. That's not who you are. But we put ourselves into other people and other things, and then we wonder why things don't work up, because the bottom line is we relinquish our control to other people and other things. We have to maintain our own control. You don't have to be nasty about it, but matter of fact, this is the way I am. This is how I think. This is what I'm going to do.
Where do you think that comes from? I mean, it feels like it's everywhere. I don't think it's one or two people. I think it's rampant, you know. And it seems so logical what you're saying. I mean, it does, you know. Of course I'm complete by myself, but I could feel that way and then something could tip me over into, you know, that insecure self again or something. Like, and I know it's processes, it's time, it's practice, but it seems like, especially with kids, you know, they want to be cool. They want to be, you know, except, you know, there's so many other things running the show than being complete with themselves.
And
so,
you just got to the heart of the matter. We focus our attention outside of ourselves to make sure we are trending in step with what's going on socially, connected to that outer world, and the pressure to stay there is tremendous. And we have a tendency to follow, I'm not sure who. You know, I always ask people, who are you following? And they don't know. But, you know, it's whatever they hear on, you know, whether it's social media or the news or whatever it may be. And I hear them rendering conclusions. Well, this is the way it is, and this candidate, this. And I, when I ask questions about where they got their information, again, they're stumped very quickly. You need to follow your own heart. If you hear something, you need to research it. Is this the way I should go? Where did they get their facts? You know, that type of thing. We allow other people to direct us, but it's kind of, I always say we're following the parade and no one's leading. We're just going down blind alleys here. You should know exactly where you're going, what you're going to do, what your plan is, and how what you're doing now helps you get to that plan. You know, it's conscious stuff. Another key I tell people is get your mind off autopilot. Stop following along mindlessly. Think about everything you're doing. Do I want to do this? Why do I want to do it? How do I want to make it happen? Put conscious thought into everything, and stop attacking the world, because that, you know, we now feel like to belong, you have to be angry and accusatory and all those things. You don't. You can get a whole lot more done being nice.
Yeah. One of the things you said was be comfortable being uncomfortable. And I think, you know, a lot of this, you know, we're on autopilot until we stop. And I liked what you said, you know, make a list of everything you're doing and then see, do you want to keep doing that? You know, and I know sometimes I'm just in that thing and it's like, stop, you know, when I can stop and actually think, I can slow down, be present and make a choice instead of like the autopilot that you're talking about. But what would you like to say about the being comfortable, being uncomfortable?
You know what? You go back to that, I'll be happy when I get there. And that, what you just mentioned, being comfortable when you're uncomfortable. Let's say you're learning a guitar And you say, well, I'll be a whole lot happier when I can play songs and maybe I can get into a band. That's what I've always wanted. But you've never played the guitar before. So now you have to learn to play the guitar. And your fingers are going to get blisters and you're going to put in hours per day and take guitar lessons and do all those things you have to do because you don't know how to play guitar and you're not an expert. That training period makes you uncomfortable until you get to the point that you begin to realize you can master this. Then the comfort level increases. Then you start to see your destination as a little bit more measurable. Ooh, that's realistic now. I can get there. But in the meantime, you're uncomfortable. What I say to people is enjoy that time. Stop getting ahead of yourself. If the only thing you can do is play the scale today and have fun. And maybe tomorrow's lesson will teach you something else. Have fun with it. Stay in the moment. Learn, train your brain, and keep on going. You get to your destination, and that uncomfortable feeling, which often comes from resistance. I don't want to do this. I want to get there. I don't want to exercise. I just want to be able to be relaxed and the weight comes off and I don't have, well, it doesn't work that way. You know, everything has a training period and that's uncomfortable. So, you know, when you can learn to accept that, not resist it, not complain. Complaining is one of our worst enemies. I always say people who complain, you know, it's so easy to control people that can complain because all they want to do is get something. They want a quick fix real fast. Take your time. Work your steps, get to where you have to go. You will get there, but enjoy the process.
All right. Unfortunately, we're almost at the end, but one last little thing. Be your own cosmic loving gatekeeper.
You decide who gets in your world and who does not. You make those decisions based upon real information. Is this, and you have to, you know, be honest with yourself. There's a chapter in the book I call Brutal Honesty, where you are being honest, even if it's painful, even if it doesn't get you the conclusion you want. It's the right conclusion because it's honest. If that person doesn't belong there, they're toxic, they lead you down the wrong path. You know, I use an example, like if your friend drinks all the time and every time you go with that person, you drink too much. Is it a good idea to let them in? Probably you want to close the gate on that person. And people who are toxic, people that abuse us, people that keep us in a negative framework. Maybe we just want to say, no, stay out there, because anything that's toxic comes in and affects the way your brain works. And it makes it that much more difficult for you to be happy. So be willing to know what you want. I want this in a person, and they need to check off all the boxes. If they don't, you need to make some decisions about whether or not they get in or not.
Wow. You make it sound so logical, which I think it is. I think, you know, sometimes I'm so far away from logic that I can't see it, but you make it sound easy. And I know it's not, but anyway, I recommend, we're about to, you know, wrap up, but I really recommend this book. You can't skim it. I've tried. You can't. It's just so full of, I don't know, I would just say genius, you know, like universal spiritual genius, that if you come out the end, you will get to love and you will get connected with, I would say, the person you always wanted to be. That's what I would say. But how would you like to wrap up? I know, you know, you could talk about your books, how they get them, how they find you. You know, what would you like to say?
I would tell people, if you want to change your life, be willing to do the work. Slow down a bit. First step, we talk about steps all the time. Try to get the things in your life that are there that don't work for you, the things that pull you back, cause problems for you. The first, it's like a purge. The first step is get those negative things out of your life. If you're anxious and you're drinking 3 or 4 or 5 cups of coffee a day, and you come and, you know, and you say, well, help me not be anxious. I say, well, I might say, let's cut the coffee down first. And you're going to look at me and say, what? Well, you know, that's a problem. And I've never met a person yet who is anxious and we took the accelerants out and they didn't get better. So, you know, be willing to take the negative things out. and then begin to put your plan together. Drinking 3 or 4 or 5 cups of coffee a day, and you come in, you know, and you say, well, help me not be anxious. I say, well, I might say, let's cut the coffee down first. And you're going to look at me and say, what? Well, you know, that's a problem. And I've never met a person yet who's anxious and we took the accelerants out and they didn't get better. So, you know, be willing to take the negative things out and then begin to put your plan together. Drinking 3 or 4 or 5 cups of coffee a day, and you come in, you know, and you say, well, help me. I can almost guarantee it. Be willing to work the program. You get there.
Thank you. Thank you so much. This has been really great. Yeah, just great. Just really great. There's so many things that I resonated with in the book, and you just make it seem so logical that this is what you do. So if you want to know what to do, folks, get the book or get the other books. You can find him on faustruggiero.com.
Yes.
You can find everything there, and the notes will be, the links will be show notes. So thank you again. Thank you for all the great work you're doing.
Thanks. Been a pleasure.
Thank you for watching this episode. I started Getting Real with Hillary when I discovered that I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together. If you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.